Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 14th. MDC selling 58 acres to National Tenant. The David Mims Business Park on I-20 was sold for $2.1 million. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Midland will soon gain a new national tenant in the David Mims Business Park on Interstate 20. Board members of the Midland Development Corporation unanimously approved a resolution Wednesday authorizing MDC Chairman Wesley Bounds to execute all documents necessary to close the sale of 58.2 acres in the business park just to the east of SPM Oil and Gas, formerly Weir, at 7010 Interstate 20. 42 Real Estate, LLC, is acquiring the land for $2.1 million on behalf of an unnamed national tenant. Weir purchased 20 acres in the 73-acre business park in 2018, opening a $30 million, 92,000-square-foot Midland Customer Service Center in the spring of 2019. The center now operates as SPM Oil and Gas since Caterpillar purchased Weir's oil and gas operations this spring. Bounds thanked MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris and Nicholas Tulay-Crum, Assistant City Attorney, for their work with 42 Real Estate on the sale. Also, at Wednesday's monthly board meeting, Bounds and Midland Mayor Patrick Payton had a brief discussion regarding economic activity in the Permian Basin and statewide. Bounds referred to activity and recovery as, quote, one foot on the gas, one foot on the brakes, end quote. Payton pointed out that has the net effect of cancellation. The mayor also commented that labor shortages are in effect pulling the reins on a horse that wants to run. Quote, the two men agreed supply chain issues and unpredictable prices are weighing down economic recovery while warehousing space is in short supply. The housing market is driving growth across the state, they said. At-large bidders to talk issues today. Forum to start at 7 p.m. inside the Carrasco Room. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Candidates for at-large city council seats will take the stage at Midland College on Thursday for the Reporter Telegram Facebook Forum. The forum will start at 7 p.m. and will take place inside the Carrasco Room. The event is open to the public and also will be broadcast on the Reporter Telegram's Facebook page. The five at-large candidates on the November 2nd ballot are Dan Carrasco, Dustin Johnson, Robin Poole, Spencer Robnett, and Michael Trost. Eligible voters will be able to pick their two favorites on the ballot, and the top two vote-getters will win seats on the council. Early voting starts October 18th. Being an at-large race, anyone inside the city can vote on this race. The forum will attempt to have a more conversational style than those forums where candidates have a specific amount of time to answer a question. At the end of the forum, candidates will have an opportunity to make a closing argument. Topics could include taxes, housing, infrastructure, economic development, quality of life initiatives, and representative government. It is expected that the forum will take between 75 and 90 minutes. The Reporter Telegram held a District 1 forum on Tuesday. It can be found on the Reporter Telegram's Facebook page. Note, the Reporter Telegram has run opinion pieces from all city council candidates on infrastructure, governing during a pandemic, and the importance of parks. Those op-eds and introductory articles on each candidate can be found at MRT.com. Cudd accepts plea deal and riot charge. Sentencing hearing scheduled for March 18th. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Midlander Jenny Cudd has pleaded guilty to one misdemeanor charge related to her participation in riots at the U.S. Capitol building as part of a plea deal with the federal government. Cudd pleaded guilty to entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds during a hearing with Washington, D.C. Judge Trevor McFadden on Wednesday. In exchange for the guilty plea, the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed to dump four other charges against her, including a felony obstruction charge. The guilty plea came after fellow Midlander Elio Rosa, who was with Cudd during the Capitol riots, was sentenced Tuesday to 1 year of probation for parading or demonstrating in a Capitol building. Cudd's sentencing hearing is scheduled for March 18th. She is facing up to 12 months in prison, a year of supervised release, and up to a $100,000 fine.
Hello, this is Cindy, reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, October 14th. Doctors brace for twindemic of flu and COVID spikes, by Ellen Francis, The Washington Post. Doctors in the United States are bracing for a twindemic of flu and coronavirus spikes. Germany bought extra flu vaccines. Tens of thousands of people in Britain are looking up worst cold ever on search engines. In countries with relatively high vaccination rates, such as the United States and in Europe, it could get tricky this winter for the immunized to tell a nasty cold from a breakthrough case of COVID. It is also hard to predict how bad this flu season will be after last year's historically low flu rates during lockdowns. With children back in school in many parts of the world and travel picking up in tourist spots, healthcare professionals worry that the flu season could come roaring back and are urging people to get their shots. Question: why are health officials worried about the flu this year? Health experts say Americans have built up less natural immunity against influenza because so few were infected in 2020. The comeback of common viruses, including RSV, brought toddlers, who were not exposed as babies, to U.S. hospitals with severe cases this year. While a feared collision of infections remained at bay last year, viruses will have more potential to spread this fall in venues opening up again. This has medical staff worried that flu and COVID-19 admissions could surge together in the next few months. Many countries have warned of this. Britain expanded its free annual flu shot drive to cover more people, while France ordered 30% more of the seasonal flu vaccine than it did last year. What are the symptoms of COVID, flu, or a cold? Can you tell the difference? The illnesses come from distinct viruses but often have similar symptoms. Some of the signs that COVID-19 and the flu share include fever, cough, and chills. The common cold is usually milder than the flu, with a runny or stuffy nose more likely. The loss of taste or smell, a possible COVID-19 symptom, can help set it apart, although people with allergies or stuffy noses might find it harder to smell too. Those with coronavirus can also take more time to show symptoms and be contagious for longer than people with flu infections. How can you tell if you have a breakthrough coronavirus infection? Most people will struggle to know for sure based on symptoms alone without a nose swab to rule out the coronavirus. And if vaccinated people test less often, COVID infections could get dismissed as mild colds or go unnoticed. British scientist Tim Spector, a founder of the Zoe app that tracks coronavirus symptoms, has said that people thinking they have colds when they really have COVID-19 could help fuel the pandemic. People who have had their coronavirus shots and are knocked out by heavy colds in Britain could be breakthrough cases without knowing it, he added, which could pose a risk if they don't get tested. Is it safe to get both the flu shot and a coronavirus vaccine? It's doubly important this year to get a flu shot, according to Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, not only to protect yourself but also to ease the strain on hospitals. The CDC is also urging everyone eligible to get a coronavirus vaccine. The CDC says people can take the COVID shot along with others without regard to timing. Already, U.S. manufacturer Moderna has plans to make a single shot that combines a booster with a flu vaccine. It is possible to get sick with both COVID-19 and the flu, infectious disease doctors have found, although studies are still looking at how common that is. Can I still get COVID-19 if I have the coronavirus vaccine? People who had their coronavirus shots can still get sick, but experts stress that vaccines remain the best weapon against the disease. The rise of breakthrough cases has sparked debate over how we think about the end of the pandemic. With variants spreading and immunity possibly waning for those inoculated many months ago, new research in the United States, Cotter, and other countries shows that vaccinations ward off severe illness, although their ability to prevent mild illness may be less robust than original studies indicated. There has been some uncertainty around the data on breakthrough infections in the United States. Still, public health officials and scientists maintain that vaccines are remarkably effective at preventing more serious consequences and keeping people out of the hospital or morgue. Football game incident under investigation by Caitlin Randall. Hector County ISD leaders are investigating after a video was posted online showing a student being harassed by other students at the Odessa High and Permian High football game last weekend. In the video, a female student wearing an Odessa High School shirt is seen having cups and food thrown at her by several students wearing Permian clothing. The video appears to have been first posted on Snapchat, then shared on Twitter, where it's received about 40,000 views. An ECISD spokesman confirmed to the Reporter Telegram on Wednesday that the incident is under investigation. School leaders have talked with the student's parents and are investigating it, he said. They are working to identify people in the video who might be able to tell them more about who else was sitting in that area and may have been involved in throwing things.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 14th, 2021. Local. Students excited by Legacy Theater's Cinderella by J.C. Lewis. Legacy High School students flocked to this year's production of Cinderella. Legacy High School Theater Director Rachel Innes said the theater program gained 25 new students for this year's musical production from many different after-school activities like dance and orchestra. They were pulled in by Cinderella, so at the very beginning of the year, we promoted the auditions in the announcements and had current theater students tell their friends, Innes said. We got so many students that we'd never seen before with so much talent, and we were excited to bring them in and work with them. She said her current students were just as excited to produce Cinderella. Students have been really excited about doing Cinderella and doing a musical, she said. They have been asking for years, and this year I told them we were going to a Cinderella musical. Last year, the program did perform 2 one-act plays during the spring semester, but was not able to hold any performances in the fall. The musical is the first one that Legacy has done in a couple of years, and it is also in its first time directing a musical. With the schools being shut down for part of the fall semester last year, we weren't able to do a big production at the beginning of the school year. So it was really great to see this kind of response from the students, she said. Inna said that her favorite part about the show is all the magic that happens. We have woven a lot of magic into the show, and it blows me away that we were able to create all the magic on stage with special effects and the amazing dance numbers, she said. Sophomore Kylie Brooks, who plays Ella, said this was her third production. She said she was most excited to bring everyone together after the pandemic. I think seeing all the company together as one, because with COVID, is exciting. It has been a while since we've been able to get a huge cast together, she said. Seeing everyone on stage doing things they love will be the most exciting part of the show. Junior Logan Lawhon, who plays Topher, said this was his fifth or sixth production with the theater group. He said he was excited to play Prince Topher. This is a great role to come and be a part of, he said. It was a dream come true. Brooks added that every little kid wants to be a Disney princess at some time in their life. Show times are 7 p.m. Thursday, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday at Legacy High School. Tickets are $20 for general admission, $15 for students, and MISD staff is free. Dive into World of Perfumes and Gems at New Library Exhibits by J.C. Lewis. Two new exhibits are on display at Midland County Public Libraries. Making Sense, the Art and Passion of Fragrance, invites visitors of all ages to discover the plants behind some of the world's most iconic perfumes. The exhibit explores the history of the perfume industry and the psychology of experience scents, according to a release. Making Sense is produced by the North Carolina Arboretum with support from the International Perfume Bottle Association. The exhibit is on view through December 30th at Centennial Library. There is also a display from the Midland Gem and Mineral Society at the Downtown Library. Society members offer live demonstrations on rock cutting and polishing from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Centennial Library. The next demonstration will be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 23rd at the Downtown Library. The exhibit is on view through October 30th.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 14th. Celia Martinez, age 86, of Midland, passed away on Monday, October 11th. A viewing will be held on Sunday, October 17th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, October 18th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. She is survived by her husband, Rodolfo Martinez, her son, Adrian Martinez, one daughter, Maria Helma Flores, three brothers, one sister, five grandchildren, eight great-grandchildren, and numerous nephews, nieces, and cousins. Don Andrew DeSantis, age 69, passed away on October 12th. Viewing will be on Sunday, October 17th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. Mass will be held on Tuesday, October 19th, at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. He is survived by his wife, Karen DeSantis, daughter, Desiree Duclos, brother, Thomas DeSantis, Jr., sister, Diane Faulkner. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Eladio Martinez, age 69, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, October 12th. A visitation will be held on Saturday, October 16th, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. with a celebration of life service and rosary at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his wife, Carol M. Martinez, one son, Joe Eladio Martinez, one daughter, Erica Gonzalez, his father, Rodolfo Martinez, one brother, one sister, six grandchildren, numerous uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, and cousins. Irma M. Sutton Parson, age 53, of Midland, passed away on Friday, October 9th. Services will be held at a later date. She is survived by her husband, Gary Lynn Parson, two sons, Joseph Barron and Joshua Barron, one daughter, Lisa Vanacek, one brother, Jimmy Bustillos, one sister, Paula Bustillos, and nine grandchildren. Vicki Lee Harmon, age 67, of Odessa, passed away on October 6th at Odessa Regional Medical Center in Odessa. Vicki was born on November 2, 1953, to James and Billy Sullivan Holloway in Lubbock, Texas. She is survived by her spouse, Douglas Calvin Haynes, one daughter, Terry Slaughter, two grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, and three siblings. A memorial will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. on October 30th at Big Daddy's in Odessa, and another the same day from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Last Few Motorcycle Clubhouse. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hi, I'm Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, October 14th, 2021. PIC Education nets new partnerships. Ector County ISD's PIC Education Program has numerous partnerships with universities and researchers, including University of South Florida and SciGlass, the virtual reality system. The department and students have also gained notice for their research and have been invited to present at national conferences. University of South Florida is a new partner with PIC Education, and Chief Innovation Officer Jason Osborne said the venture was a year in the making. "This will be a big partnership," Osborne said. "The way the collaboration worked was we had multiple colleges that were trying to build a neuroscience curriculum for undergraduate studies, and they're trying to build the curriculum around a software platform that also looks at what's called neuron connectomes." Osborne added, "This is the neurons within the brain, how they are connected together, and looking at tissue volumes of brain data. The software that they're using is CatMade. This software platform is an open source software, so it doesn't cost anything for us to use at all. And then we have access to this many terabytes of data." The idea was for these undergraduate classrooms to study neuroscience within the software platform because you can manipulate tons of open source data, Osborne said. This ties in with the work of students in Bernadette Berrigan's class at George H.W. Newtech Odessa that is studying fly brains using virtual reality. Osborne said that if they learned neuroscience in high school, they would be leaving with a post-secondary experience and in some cases postdoctoral because they are working with the same data set that researchers use around the world. An abstract was sent to the Society for Neuroscience, which was an international platform, and they accepted it, as did Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. It was accepted for the Society of Neuroscience conference in November. The Innovation Department also has a chance to send students to study at the Marine Biology Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. The Innovation Department recently had a conversation with Woods Hole and researchers up there, and it's very possible that it would cost nothing to send the students to Woods Hole for a week, along with teachers, to learn from researchers in their marine lab, he said. There's a lot of people from around the world that go to Woods Hole to do research, and there's a lot of researchers that come in and out of that facility. The organisms that they study provide lots of different questions, and there's tons and tons of data, so how can our kids be part of that data analysis? That sparks interest in career opportunities. So it's yet another way that we can provide real-world connections that just don't exist in this area, he added. The object is to make as many opportunities available as possible. There are tons of opportunities here locally, but then there are many things that students and teachers have no idea about outside of our area. So we want to provide as many opportunities as possible. He said Linda Hyman, Director of Education in the Marine Biology Laboratory at Woods Hole, and Jean Onright, Manager of Student Affairs and Undergraduate Programs, also at the Marine Biology Laboratory, are excited to work with ECISD students. They love the idea of bringing folks in from far away like we are. We're all the way in Texas. It's much easier to have local students come, but it's a broader impact for them and the research to expand that. That's a fantastic opportunity, Osborne said. Coming up in April, Osborne, ECISD Board of Trustees President Tammy Hawkins and Trustee Chris Stanley will present the virtual reality aspect of neuroscience at the National School Board Conference in San Diego. That's a big deal to get in that national conference, Osborne said. Downtown holiday festivities to return. Halloween and Christmas festivities are returning to downtown 1 year after the COVID-19 Grinch shut down most events. The always popular Trunk or Treat will be held 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. October 30th at 4th Street at Noel Heritage Plaza. Downtown Odessa, Inc.'s event coordinator, Alexa Malakas, said, "We're super excited to be back," Malakas said, who noted the event will feature plenty of children's games, food trucks, music, and a free movie in the park at 8 p.m. All activities are free to the public, and businesses are encouraged to participate in the annual Trunk Tent Decorating Contest. Due to COVID last year, event planners had to be creative and design activities that practice social distancing. Malakas said, "One pleasant result was the creation of a scavenger hunt that invited the public to visit downtown businesses where they could rack up points and compete for prizes. The response was so overwhelmingly positive, organizers decided to bring the event back for an encore," Malakas said. "Downtown businesses that want to be included as a scavenger hunt destination must register with Downtown Odessa, Inc. by contacting Malakas at 432-335-4682 or amoulakis at odessa-tx.gov. The cost of participating is $100 per business. Public participation is free, but in order to obtain scavenger hunt clues, participants must download the app EventZ, EventZEE. Also, making a welcome return will be the popular Parade of Lights, scheduled for December 4th, which annually attracts 40,000 to 50,000 people, Malakas said. The parade will begin at 6:30 p.m. at 23rd Street on Andrews Highway and travel south on Andrews Highway, where it will turn west on 3rd Street to Medical Center Hospital parking lot for destaging. To register for the parade, visit tinyurl.com/2VWFSBTW. COVID-19 news by the numbers, COVID in the basin. Ector County, 25,337 total cases, 512 deaths. Midland County, 27,609 total cases, 353 deaths. Texas, 4,157,754 total cases, 68,665 deaths. U.S. cases, 45,500,587 total confirmed and 739,038 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. MCH Daily COVID Numbers. Medical Center Hospital Daily COVID Inpatient Numbers as of 9 a.m. Wednesday. 38 total COVID patients in-house. MedSurg non-critical, 23 COVID patients, 19 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Critical care, 15 COVID patients, 13 on ventilator. 10 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 2 unknown. Of the 13 COVID patients on ventilator, 2 are vaccinated, 9 are unvaccinated, 2 unknown. Age ranges of COVID-19 patients, 31 to 93 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 1 from Andrews, 1 from Big Spring, 1 from Campwood, 4 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Jal, New Mexico, 2 from Midland, 1 from Pecos, the rest are from Odessa, Ector County. Quick Hits Operation ELF, Centers for Children and Families, 3701 Andrews Highway, Midland, are accepting donations for its Operation ELF from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. through November 24th. The center is collecting new unwrapped toys for children ages 4 through 12 and accepting donations. For the gift cards for teens, gifts may be dropped off Monday through Thursday or mailed at the center. Donations may be made via credit card at centerstx.org. For more information, call 432-570-1084. Email kedwards@cnetrstx.org or visit tinyurl.com/24ptmmvx. Food Truck Battle. Pachuco Mobile Food Company has scheduled a 2021 Permian Basin Food Truck Battle event from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, and from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday at the Bush Tennis Center, 5700 Briarwood Avenue, Midland. Proceeds support the Midtown Soldiers Boxing Club. For more information, call 325-812-2708. Email pmfco2019@gmail.com. or visit tinyurl.com/3H7T8UV6. Dia de la Raza Fiesta. Hispanic Heritage of Odessa has scheduled Dia de la Raza Fiesta finale as part of Celebrando la Cultura Hispanic Heritage Month at 7 p.m. Friday at Ahuas, 2100 Andrews Highway. For more information, call Carol Yuronga at 432-349-9840. Trail of Horrors. Midland's Trail of Horrors, 3112 South County Road, 1197, Midland, has scheduled a Midland's Trail of Horrors opening night event from 7:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. Friday. For more information, call 432-230-8667. Email midknytentertainment@gmail.com or visit tinyurl.com/2xse3d5x. Performances, the Hacienda Event Center, 12610 Texas 191 Frontage Road, Midland, has scheduled the following events. Today, Seve Aoki. Friday, JJ El Gigante de la Comedia. October 22nd, Los Three Grandes, Primavera, Huracanes y Riel Eros. October 30th, Cancer Sucks Fest featuring Eli Young Band. November 5th, Christian Castro Hits Tour. November 12th, Signo, Joe Lopez y Grupo Maz. November 25th, Faruco. January 14th, 2022, Camila Carla Bru and special guest El Chapero Shoshenica. January 21st, Gerardo Ortiz, La Adictiva, La Fiera de la Hinoga Impacto, Sinalonce. For event times and tickets, visit HaciendaMidland.com. Concert. Odessa Arts has scheduled the Petty Breakers to perform at 6 p.m. Friday at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. For tickets or information, visit tinyurl.com/5fjhbt7b. Free bulky item drop-off. The Ector County Environmental Enforcement Unit has scheduled a free bulky item drop-off from 8 a.m. to noon, October 16th, at the Ector County property at Tripp Avenue and Bowles Road. All loads will be inspected at the gate to ensure we can accept them. The following items will not be accepted: tires, refrigerators, oil or oil filters, construction or demolition debris, paints, tree limbs, household garbage, batteries, or hazardous waste. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/5b74zkya or co.ector.texas.us/page/ector.environmental enforcement. West Texas Winds. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will present West Texas Winds, Our Favorites, Volume 2, at 7:30 p.m. October 21st at the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard. General admission is $15 and students are $5. The concert will include Irving Fine, Paratita for Wind Quintet, John Michael DeMace, Dick's September Variations, Opus 22, Eugene Boza, Scherzo, Opus 48, and Eric Wiesen, Roaring Fork. Tickets are available at the door. Visit mosc.org. Art Table Talk. Ballroom Marfa has scheduled Art Table Talk with Marcella Guerrero and Daisy Nam at 11 a.m. October 27th. In this virtual talk, the two will discuss Donna Huanca Espejo Quemada, as well as Guerrero's significant work with Latinx artists and exhibitions. Cost is $10 for ballroom audiences with the code ATXBMFRIEND and $5 for students with the code ATXBMStudent. To register, visit tinyurl.com/3WCPJUB6. For more information, call 432-729-3600, email information at ballroommarfa.com or visit ballroommarfa.org. OHS to rededicate observatory, unveil planetarium. In 1969, Odessa High School opened a new science building that included a rooftop observatory equipped with telescopes. It served as a focal point of astronomy class until it was slowly phased out and mostly forgotten. However, last year the platform was rediscovered and is now refurbished, repainted with a mural, and ready for use again. In addition, an inflatable planetarium in the school's old auditorium now works with a new observatory to give even more students access to stargazing and studying the universe. On Wednesday, October 20th, ECISD officials will hold a press conference to tell the story of the original observatory and a ribbon-cutting ceremony before giving tours of the new facility. The event will be held on the front steps of the school, 901 North Dotsey Avenue, and will start at 8 p.m. Health Resources Event. The public is invited to the Mayor's Drug and Crime Commission's free resource community event, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday, October 16th at Sherwood Park Community Center. Various organizations will be in attendance to inform the public about community resources that promote healthy families. The event will feature free hot dogs, a live DJ, and kid-friendly activities. Former Odessa City Mayor David Turner launched the annual event in 2012 to promote healthy families and communities. Women's Center fundraiser set for November 19th. The Jesus House Women and Children's Center will host an old-fashioned Christmas celebration fundraiser from 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. November 19th at Mid-Cities Church in Midland. The event will feature a Christmas tree decorating contest, food, a nativity scene featuring actors, a silent auction, hay rides, various games and activities for youth, and musical performances, said Dustin Fochet, a board member for the Women and Children's Center. All activities are free to the public. It's going to be a lot of fun for the whole family and help raise funds for the center, Fawcett said. Organizers are calling on local youth groups to sign up for the Christmas tree decorating contest. The trees will be auctioned off along with other donated items, Fawcett said. Special music guest Matt New, who was featured on season 17 of the hit TV talent show The Voice, will also be performing a free concert. New is currently working on his debut EP. For more information about the silent auction, tree decorating contest, and how to obtain advance concert tickets, call the center at 432-557-3963 or email shirley@jesushouseodessa.com. Unsupported sick out claims take flight amid Southwest woes. Dallas. When Southwest Airlines canceled more than 2,000 flights over the weekend, citing bad weather and air traffic control issues, unsupported claims blaming vaccine mandates began taking off. Conservative politicians and pundits, including Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, alleged the flight disruptions resulted from pilots and air traffic controllers walking off their jobs or calling in sick to protest federal vaccine requirements. The airline, its pilots' union, and the Federal Aviation Administration denied that. The weekend challenges were not a result of Southwest employee demonstrations, Southwest spokesman Chris Maines said Monday. Still, Twitter posts claiming airline employees were standing up to medical tyranny and participating in a mass sick out amassed thousands of shares. Vague and anonymous messages on social media speculated that Southwest was hiding the real reason for its disruptions. And anti-vaccine rallying cries, such as #DoNotComply, hashtag no vaccine mandate and hashtag hold the line were among the 10 most popular hashtags tweeted in connection to Southwest over the weekend. According to a report from media intelligence firm Zignals Lab, even as flights appear to be running closer to normal on Tuesday, the Texas-based airline remained at the center of the latest front in the vaccine mandate culture wars, its challenges exploited by opponents of vaccine requirements. Neither the company nor its pilots' union has provided evidence to back up their explanations for nearly 2,400 flights being canceled from Saturday through Monday. Southwest has only said that bad weather and air traffic control issues in Florida on Friday triggered cascading failures in which planes and pilots were trapped out of position for their next flight. The crisis peaked on Sunday when the airline canceled more than 1,100 flights, or 30% of its schedule. By Tuesday evening, it had canceled fewer than 100 flights, or 2% of its schedule, although more than 1,000 flights were delayed, according to tracking service FlightAware. When you get behind, it just takes several days to catch up, CEO Gary Kelly said Tuesday on CNBC. We were significantly set behind on Friday. Southwest struggled all summer with delays and cancellations. A senior executive admitted to employees Sunday that the airline is still understaffed and might need to reduce flights in November and December. Despite repeated requests, the company and the union have declined to say how many employees missed work during the crisis. They have said that absentee rates were similar to those over a typical summer weekend, but they have not put out numbers to support that argument. It is also unclear how many Southwest pilots are unvaccinated. We don't know, and the company doesn't know, said Casey Murray, president of the Southwest Airlines Pilot Association. Meanwhile, speculation from prominent conservative politicians and pundits has flooded the void. Many shared the unsubstantiated theory, but few provided details, facts, or examples of employees walking off the job to protest the vaccine. Joe Biden's illegal vaccine mandate at work, Cruz tweeted Sunday. Suddenly, we're short on pilots and air traffic controllers. Hashtag thanks, Joe. The Republican senator wrote in another tweet Monday that he met last week with leaders of pilot unions who expressed deep concern over the vaccine mandates. A spokesman for Southwest Airlines said no one at the union has talked to Cruz. A spokesperson for Cruz did not respond to email questions from the Associated Press about whether the Republican senator had any firsthand knowledge of pilots or air traffic controllers skipping work. Republican U.S. Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin also posted the rumors on social media without offering proof. Vague, familiar-looking friend-of-a-friend stories are a dangerous form of misinformation because they feel like insider information being shared by individuals directly involved in the action. According to Rachel Moran, a misinformation scholar at the University of Washington, similar unsupported claims circulated online in August when social media users falsely claimed that flight delays and cancellations out of Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport were the result of vaccine mandates. In September, false internet rumors swirled that 40% of employees at defense contractor General Dynamics had declined the vaccine and threatened to quit. Some Twitter users connected Southwest flight problems to news that on Friday, the Southwest Airlines Pilots Association had asked a federal judge in Dallas to block the airline's vaccine mandate. The union said under federal labor law, Southwest must bargain with the union before making changes affecting working conditions. The judge has not yet ruled. Asked on Tuesday to respond to claims that vaccine mandates have reduced the workforce and contributed to supply chain disruptions, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki took a jab at Cruz, sarcastically labeling him a world-renowned business, travel, and health expert before defending Biden's policy. City postpones action on gambling establishments. The Odessa City Council on Tuesday voted to postpone action that would have made it more difficult for game rooms to operate in the city. Several council members said postponing the vote will give city administrators and legal staff more time to strengthen several proposed ordinance amendments and close any legal loopholes game room operators have previously used to skirt the law. Basically, we wanted more time to study the issue, said Councilman Steve Thompson, who supported fellow Councilman Tom Sprawl's motion to table the issue. For example, Thompson said, council initially wanted to pass an amendment that prohibited game rooms from being located within 1,000 feet of another gaming establishment, church, educational institution, healthcare facilities, public building, or the boundary line of a residential zoning district. But that plan had to be scrapped after City Attorney Natasha Brooks informed council that state law only allows cities to impose a maximum 300 feet location ban. I know it doesn't make sense, but state law allows counties to pass an ordinance of 1,000 feet, but not cities, Thompson said. So one of the things that city wants to do is see if we can work with the county and pass a countywide game room ordinance. Council was confronted by that very issue during Tuesday's council meeting when Midland attorney Jason Hamm challenged the legality of the city's attempt to amend their ordinance regulating game rooms. Hamm, who made his comments after council had already unanimously voted to postpone their vote, told council their proposed amendments contained a number of issues, inconsistencies, and typos. He also warned that some of their proposed efforts to more strongly regulate game rooms were illegal. He cited the 1,000 feet rule as an example. Hamm, who said he was representing a client who owns a game room in Odessa, also accused the city of unfairly targeting gambling establishments. He argued that game rooms should be allowed to stay open until 2 a.m., 7 days per week, rather than the city's proposed 11 p.m. weekday closing and midnight on weekends. Currently, the city doesn't regulate hours for game rooms, so many of them are open 24 hours a day. Pool halls and dance halls are open until 2 a.m., Hamm said. For some reason, game rooms are being singled out. Hamm did acknowledge that many of these gambling facilities are a haven for drugs, illegal gambling, violence, and many other crimes. My client is all for an ordinance that gets rid of the riffraff, said Hamm, who blamed the illegal activity on game rooms owned by people who don't live in Odessa. In recent years, we've seen an influx of out-of-towners moving in. According to Odessa City Police records, there are at least 23 game rooms operating in Odessa currently. The biggest problem is that the city's current ordinance does very little to govern game rooms, Planning Director Randy Brindley has said. Police Chief Michael Gerke said police frequently bust these gambling facilities for operating illegally and shut them down, but game room owners have been using a legal loophole to remain in business by transferring ownership to a spouse or other family member. The problem we've had is we'll close one of these places down, but by the end of the week, they're open again and operating under a new owner, Gerke said. Under the proposed amended ordinance, if a game room's ownership is transferred to another owner, it automatically is considered a new business and must adhere to all the new requirements being proposed. For example, the proposed ordinance amendment would only allow new game rooms to open up in areas already zoned light industrial and heavy industrial districts, Planning Director Randy Brindley has said. The businesses would be required to have 30 paved parking spaces, plus one space for every 100 square feet of floor area over 2,000 square feet. Game room hours of operation would also be limited to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to midnight Friday through Sunday. Obituaries. Josie Rosalie Turner Warden, Odessa. Josie Rosalie Warden passed from this life on Friday, October 8, 2021 in Odessa, Texas. She was born Thursday, February 2, 1961, in Midland, Texas, to Rosie and Elvis Turner. Those left to cherish her memory are Michelle and Felix Pondo, Misty Russell, Jerry Russell, Joshua and Shay Warden, and Melissa Warden, sisters Violet and Roy Brooks, Sandra and Nick Patton, Kathy and Dale Dyke, Diana and Paul Terrier, grandchildren Dylan, Justin, and Bailey Pando, Cassidy and Ashler Crownover, Tiffany Austin and Alex Nava, Kobe and Destiny Russell, Alex Grace and Dayton Brunette, Caitlin Addison and Emma Warden, Zandier Rylan and Kinsley Collins, and many great-grandchildren. Josie is preceded in death by her husband, Gerald Warden, parents Rosie and Elvis Turner, brothers Albert Turner, Billy Turner, and James Turner, sisters Helen Turner, Judy Turner, and Janice Turner. Memorial services are scheduled for 10 o'clock a.m. Saturday, October 16th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Services entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. David Anaya, Odessa. David Anaya, 84, died Wednesday, October 6th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Eva D. Bernard, Odessa. Eva D. Bernard, 79, of Odessa, Texas, died Saturday, October 9th in Odessa, Texas. Funeral service is scheduled for 12 o'clock noon, October 15th at the Holy Redeemer Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jose Bravo, Odessa. Jose Bravo, 82, died Wednesday, October 13th in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Rosa Trujillo de Marquez, Odessa. Rosa Trujillo de Marquez, 80, died Saturday, October 9th in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jennifer Hernandez Yanez, Odessa. Jennifer Hernandez Lanez, 37, of Odessa, Texas, died Thursday, September 23rd in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, October 16th at Martinez Funeral Home, outside chapel. Viewing will be Friday. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Julian H. Luna, Odessa. Julian H. Luna, 72, died Sunday, October 3rd. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Anita Marin, Odessa. Anita Marin, 76, died Wednesday, October 13th in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Ruben Munoz, Jr., Odessa. Ruben Munoz, Jr. of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 21st in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. Friday, October 15th at La Margarita Fairgrounds, 1257 West Monahan Street, Odessa, 79763. Burial will take place at a later date. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Mariano Navarrete Jr., Odessa. Mariano Navarrete Jr., 74, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, October 6th, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 19th, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Garden Redemption Sections. Anthony M. Antoni Prieto, Odessa. Anthony M. Antoni Prieto, 58, died Saturday, October 9th, in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Kenneth Dale Rowland, Odessa. Kenneth Dale Rowland, 87, of Gardendale, Texas, died Monday, October 11th, in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m., October 16th, at Gardendale Church of Christ. Visitation will be held on Saturday, October 16th, from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. Burial will take place Saturday, November 6th, at Swan's Chapel Crematory, located in Anson, Texas. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Francisca Kika Torres, Odessa. Francisca Kika Torres, 67, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 5th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday, October 16th, at Martinez Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.